Good morning. We will call the July 19th, 2023 Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting to order. I will ask Director Cronia, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning if we could all stand?
Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I will ask the Board Secretary at this time if she would give the directions for virtual participation and call the roll of the board, please.
Absolutely. I will be going over the guidelines for EMWD board meetings. To avoid creating acoustic feedback, please mute all your devices during the meeting unless you are speaking. Before speaking, please unmute your device and turn down the volume of any other devices that are near you and tuned into the meeting. If you have joined by phone and would like to comment on an item, please press star 9 to let our staff know and wait to be notified. When it is your turn to speak, you will hear a notification asking you to unmute your phone by pressing star 6. If you have joined by computer, you may use the chat feature in Zoom to indicate your desire to speak. When done speaking, please mute your device again. Please participate from a quiet environment so that the board can hear you when you are speaking. And now we will do roll call. President Polly.
Present.
Director Cronin.
Here.
Director Slauson.
Here.
Director Armstrong.
Here.
Director Breckard.
Here.
And our legal counsel is present.
Mr. Legal Counsel, you wanted to make an announcement on Director Breckard's participation remotely?
Yes, just that he will be participating remotely pursuant to the requirements of Government Code Section 54953. The location of his remote participation has been posted and is available to the public.
Thank you very much. That will ask, is there anyone who has filled out a card for public comment this morning on any item not on the agenda?
Nothing that I'm aware of.
Okay. None on that. With that, we will go to item 3, which is our public hearing this morning. This is the time and place for a duly noticed public hearing regarding the collection of delinquent and unpaid charges for water and other services via the 2022-2023 Riverside County property tax roll. I declare the public hearing now open, and I'd ask for a staff report on the proposed actions. Good morning.
Good morning, President Polly and members of the board. The Municipal Water District Law of 1911, specifically California Water Code Section 7100 through 7300, provides for delinquent and unpaid charges for water and other services to be added to and become part of the annual taxes levied upon the property for which the charges and use occurred. The placing of delinquent and unpaid charges on the secured property tax roll is an established process utilized by water service providers, including use by EMWD in previous years. At this time, it is recommended that the parcels identified on Exhibit A to the proposed resolution be submitted to the County of Riverside's auditor-controller for purposes of collection through this process. The identified parcels represent closed residential property owner accounts with a past due balance of $500 or greater for 60 days or more. I would be happy to answer any questions the board may have at this time.
Any questions from board members? Seeing none, I'd like to ask the Secretary to Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published in the Press Enterprise, a local newspaper, on July 9, 2023, and again on July 16, 2023. And letters were also mailed to the address on record for affected property owners.
The Secretary of Board has received any written protest of proposal. I'd like her to provide copies to the Board at this time.
No written protests to the proposal have been received.
Good. Thank you. Since members of the public have been invited to participate in the hearing telephonically, I'd like to ask if any members of the public would like to comment on this item, please do so now. Do we have any via the phone or the web?
No one online, President Polly.
And I understand we do have a speaker on this item present in chambers.
That is correct.
Very good. This time, sir, Mr. Eden, is it? Yes, sir. Please, if you'd like to comment, we allow up to three minutes for our speakers. If you'd like to come to the podium there, sir.
I've never done this before.
That's okay.
My biggest issue is I'm own one house.
So anyway, if this goes to, is there a limit, or how does that work? So if I'll give you an example. COVID came in. They told the people they could stay in the houses as long as they want, not pay rent. I had one renter stay in a house for 8.5 months. If that happens with the water, if they turn on the water for 8.5 months, what would I be charged, I guess, would be the biggest thing.
So, sir, we can't respond at the hearing for public comments, but I'm sure that we could have a person in our customer service division see if they could assist you.
Okay, so anyway, you need checks and balances. You guys are a large company with a great...
We're actually a public agency.
And corporate giant. You guys can write this off.
We're a public agency owned by the ratepayers, including yourself.
Okay. But you guys can technically write this off a lot better than I can. Income for retirement, Social Security is a supplement. It is not my full amount. And the only way I could get some income is actually having a rental house to give me income. Now then, I ran my own business for years without a bankruptcy. Unlike some politicians, they file for bankruptcy more like 7 in one lifetime. That person probably no. But anyway, this being said and done, if I had COVID going on my whole life, I would never get paid rent for my house. Although if somebody was in that house, they turned my water on for 8 months, I would hate to see what the bill you guys could charge me for that. Could be supplement, but could be as much as $4,000 a month times 8. That'd be $32,000 I would owe you. I don't think that's right. If you give the public a chance to take advantage, they will take advantage. So I pay my own trash bill because I've had problems with this before. Trash bills are fixed at $1,000 a month. So I pay 3 months worth of that. So I can keep up with that. So in other words, you're giving me something here I can't deal with, because I would never be able to come up with $32,000.
Thank you for your comments. Again, sir, we could probably get someone in the lobby to take a look at your particular situation.
And President Pauly, we will follow up. But I did want to clarify a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Last year, the prohibition on shutoffs did sunset. So currently, if there are delinquent accounts, we do follow the notification process. And ultimately, we do have the ability, if someone is delinquent, to shut them off. So that sunset that's being referred to relative to tenants did sunset last year. We also were successful in receiving state funding for delinquent accounts, and we were able to apply those credits to delinquent accounts. So those issues have been addressed. And I don't know, Dan, if there's anything else you wanted to add.
Yes, President Pauly and members of the board. Just to clarify, today's action pertains only to owner occupied and closed accounts. This does not reflect the process that will be implemented within the next year regarding tenant-based accounts. This is only closed owner-occupied accounts. I believe there were 40-some-odd on this process.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Do we have any other speakers who have filled out a card?
We do not.
Seeing no further speakers, I declare this public hearing now closed. At this time, we are ready to adopt the following resolution. A resolution adding unpaid charges for water and other services pursuant to the Municipal Water District Law of 1911, specifically California Water Code Section 71000 through 73000 to the 2023-2024 Secured Property Tax Roll Delinquent Accounts. I will look for a motion and a second.
Make that motion.
Motion by Director Armstrong.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Director Slauson. I will look for a vote, please. A roll call vote.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That passes 5-0. The resolution we have just adopted approves the collection of delinquent and unpaid charges for water and other services via the 2022-2023 Riverside County property tax roll. That we will now go on to item 4 on our agenda, which is our executive reports. Mr. Mawad.
President Pauly?
Yes, Director Record.
It's Director Record. I'm going to have to drop off for a little bit, but I'll be back as soon as I can, and certainly before closed session.
Thank you very much, sir.
Good morning again, President Pauly, members of the board. My report is included in your packets. Under new and ongoing items, very pleased to share with you that last week we were notified that the 2024 House Interior EPA Appropriations Subcommittee bill included 4 earmarks for EMWD infrastructure projects, totaling $4.86 million for EMWD. These include a project sponsored by Congressman Calvert for $2.3 million to assist us with the water booster stations improvement effort, an additional $960,000 from Congressman Takano for the Cactus Feeder Pipeline Project, also from Congressman Takano, an additional $960,000 for our Purified Water Replenishment Project, and from Congressman Issa, $638,000 for the French Valley Recycled Water Project. The appropriations sponsored by Congressman Calvert was in the full amount that we had requested. The other appropriations were reduced as a result of budget negotiations back in Washington, D.C. Not that I track this, but I am very pleased to say that among all of our neighboring water agencies, EMWD was the highest recipient in terms of earmark amounts. So,
Joe, how would we know if you didn't track that?
So
that is very impressive for our team, and I just want to jump in for a second and congratulate everybody involved in that, because that is really shows the dedication of our staff to have those kind of numbers come back.
Thank you. So, thank you, President Pauly. And I appreciate your support and Dr. Armstrong's support. When we went back to D.C., met with our entire delegation, I think those types of initiatives and efforts really do make a difference for our ratepayers, ultimately. And these funds are going to directly offset our costs and our ratepayers' costs. Next item, as you're aware, late last week and over the weekend, there were a number of wildfires that spread throughout our region. And on Friday afternoon, in coordination with our risk management team, we did activate our emergency management operations center at a management level. And our team, Doug Heffley and his entire team from safety and risk and emergency management, we're coordinating very closely with both the county as well as state fire officials. We did deploy several of our power generators to booster stations in the area of the wildfires in case Edison decided to shut off power to those areas. We also had helicopter dip into our recycled water pond in the back of this facility to help with firefighting services. Ultimately, we're very pleased that the Ritchie Canyon Fire, Gavilan Fire, and Gibble Fires were significantly contained. The Rabbit Fire, which, as you're aware, is currently still ongoing, and it's about 8,000 acres of burned area, is about 45% contained. But again, the risk has receded significantly. We're going to continue to monitor conditions, coordinate with the fire officials, both at the county and state level, make sure we're available to support as needed. We're also monitoring the air quality in the region, and we will be alerting our employees, whether it's relative to availability of N95 respirators or any other practices they need to implement. So we'll monitor air quality and notify our employees accordingly. But I just want you to be aware, our staff was essentially monitoring the events over the weekend and providing coordination and support to the fire officials. Next item, I'm also pleased to report that last week at the Metropolitan Water District, the Los Alamos Hills annexation took a major step forward, and Metropolitan Board did approve the annexation of the properties that we have been working on. It was approved on consent calendar after being heard at the Finance, Audit, Insurance, and Real Property Committee that Director Armstrong sits on. So we're very pleased that Metropolitan has taken this step. We anticipate to receive the resolution from Metropolitan in about a four-week period, which actually puts us a couple of months ahead of schedule. Once we get that resolution, we will be putting together the application to Riverside LAFCO. We anticipate the annexation will come forward to Riverside LAFCO in November or December of this year for consideration in terms of annexation. So good news on that front. Next, I wanted to update you. As you're aware, in 2021, the board had approved an agreement with the city of Hemet for purchase of up to 20,000 acre feet of groundwater carryover credits. And on an annual basis, we and the city review the available credits and we update the calculation for said purchase. And this year, we did provide a calculation to the city, which amounts to slightly under $2.1 million for 2,500 acre feet of groundwater carryover credits. We provided that, the city concurred with it. So we will be moving forward with payment on July 25th. And upon execution of that payment, we will be notifying the Hemet Center Center Water Master so they can reflect the transaction for the groundwater credits. This will be the third year that we've conducted such a transaction. Under items of interest to the board, I wanted to let you know that on July 12th, we hosted five staff members from the Department of Interior Office of Inspector General. The Office of Inspector General and their team of auditors and inspectors were out here to look at sponsors such as EMWD who are participating in the bipartisan infrastructure legislation funding, specifically Title 16 funding from the Bureau of Reclamation, where we are recipients of $27.5 million from the Bureau. And they wanted to review our processes, our practices relative to contracting and other measures. It was a really good meeting. In fact, we provided a tour where we will be constructing the future PWR facilities, also toured the Mountain Avenue replenishment basin. So overall, it was a very productive meeting. We also had Jack Sims from the Bureau's Temecula office, as well as Stacy Wade, came out for the meeting. So overall, just a great opportunity to reconnect with our friends at the Bureau of Reclamation and Department of Interior. Finally, I wanted to mention that last week as well, I attended the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Change of Command Ceremony in El Monte. And it was a great opportunity to meet the incoming commander, Colonel Baker, who will be assuming the L.A. District U.S. Army Corps of Engineers from Colonel Bolton. It was a very traditional ceremony, and in fact, during the remarks, EMWD was specifically cited and noted as a partner of the Army Corps of Engineers for our longstanding effort on the South Paris desalination program. Also, I did want to mention that on July 7th, we did host Colonel Bolton here at EMWD for the signing of the project partnership agreement, which will allow us to move forward with the next increment of the desalination program. And we also provided her a tour of our Paris Sud Desalter. I want to thank President Pauly and Vice President Corona for attending the ceremony. I thought it was a really nice effort for us to, again, underscore and highlight our partnership with the Army Corps of Engineers. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Questions? Director Slauson?
Just one question. Can you remind us approximately how many acre feet of carryover credit does Hemet still have, like currently?
I'm sorry, how many?
City of Hemet.
The city of Hemet. I will have to get the exact amount, Director Slauson, but my recollection is that when we entered this agreement in 2021, the 20,000 acre feet that we would be purchasing over an 8-year period represented approximately half of the carryover credits that they have at the time. Now, every year they add to their account, but they utilize less than what is added to the account. So approximately it's about half of what the city has.
They're in a good position. They're safe.
They are. And essentially the city came to the realization that they're not going to use the credits, whereas we're still a growing agency with growing customer base. We have that need. So I think it was a wonderful, mutually beneficial arrangement that we were able to reach with them.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Armstrong.
Yep. I just wanted to also congratulate and compliment staff on the appropriations. That's really a remarkable achievement. I know President Pauly's legacy and lore in D.C. is helpful. Got to see that firsthand, but I know that it's the staff that really, you know, makes these things happen with your efforts.
It's the staff that makes things happen.
Yeah, so thank you for that, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments, Dr. Armstrong.
All right, any other comments for the general manager? See none. Thank you, Joe. Laura, do we have anything this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I just wanted to let you know EMWD continues to engage with South Coast Water District on potential partnerships for the Doheny Ocean Desalination Project. We've continued to work with staff on establishing draft terms and conditions for our potential both financial and technical partnership in the procurement of the design, build, operate, maintain company. On June 22nd, the South Coast Water District Board of Directors did approve their staff to go ahead and advance the RFQ for the DBOM consultants, and that RFQ is expected any week now. Also, tomorrow, Joe will be participating in a meeting with Metropolitan, also the Municipal Water District of Orange County, South Coast Water District, as well as other interested partners to continue exploring how exchange of water could occur and or water supply benefits that could be afforded by participation in this program. So more to come. Hopefully we'll be bringing an MOU soon to this board, but just wanted to provide you with that update. Also, I wanted to share with the board that our staff continues on our efforts to replace non-functional turf. We currently have four large projects underway with the Romoland School District, the Revival Christian Fellowship in Menifee, as well as the City of Paris. The completion of these projects will result in over 150,000 square feet of non-functional turf replaced. And that's all I had this morning.
All right. Matt?
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Just wanted to let you know, you may have heard that Diamond Valley Lake is in the middle of an algae bloom. Thankfully, it's not been so bad that they've had to close the lake for recreation. They've been able to leave it open and just post some warning signs. We did get feedback that they did some satellite imagery and surface observations indicate that the lake is improving, so that's all good news. However, you know, as you're aware, the lake's being filled. We're not currently relying on DVL for water supply, so not much of an impact there anyhow. Lake Paris also had an algae bloom that was treated about a month ago, and Met is drawing about 25% of the supply from the lake just to blend with state project water. And we suspect, due to where our turnout is, we're getting a large volume of water from the lake at our Paris filtration plant, and we're actually experiencing some operational issues with filtration there. So we're working with Met on the water quality, seeing if we can make any adjustments and get a little more output from the filter plant. But we'll have more news on that as we work on that issue. And then finally, did want to let you know, as you recall, we had an operational shift agreement to help shift to Colorado River supplies during the drought. And we've wrapped that agreement up. All payments have been made. And in total, we received about $2,075,000 from Met as part of that program. About halfway through, I was able to negotiate the inclusion of Well 75 into the agreement, and that accounted for about $1 million in payments from Met for that. So about $1 million for costs at the filter plant, and about $1 million for having to shut down Well 57. So just want to let you know that was complete, and that program worked out pretty well for us.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for our staff? Very good. With that, we will go on to item 5, which is our consent calendar. Do any members of the board want to have a separate vote or need to pull an item for conflict? See none. I'll look for a motion and a second on the consent calendar. Moved by Director Corona, second by Director Slauson. Make it a roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crono?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
And that passes 4-0 with Director Record temporarily away. We will now move on to the action calendar. Item A, which is to approve an authorized agreement with Black and Veatch for Paris and San Jacinto Valley flow monitoring and model calibration. An additional appropriation amount of $862,000. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board.
My name is Damian Betcher, and I'm here to present the Paris and San Jacinto Valley flow monitoring and model calibration project. So here's a brief agenda. I'll go over the project background and then review the project elements, how we selected a consultant, and finally our recommendation. So the previous flow monitoring program was completed in 2015 as part of the wastewater facilities master plan update that was done that year, and it was completed in three phases. We started in Temecula, then moved into Moreno Valley, and finally Paris and San Jacinto Valleys, and we're continuing that same phased approach with the current flow monitoring effort. We started in 2022 with Moreno Valley. Temecula Valley is currently ongoing, and this request, the current request, is for the third and final phase of in Paris and San Jacinto Valleys. There have been significant changes in both areas since the 2015 monitoring was done. We've seen development continue, but there have been some significant changes in the nature of the development. We're seeing a shift from residential-type development to more logistical-type development, including distribution warehouses and things like that. In addition, we've seen a positive response to our conservation efforts, which has reduced wastewater water demands, but that has in turn increased the concentration of our wastewater flows because there's less water to dilute the constituents in the wastewater. So that has created some challenges at our wastewater treatment plants. So first, the project, we will develop a flow monitoring plan, and then we will use that plan to place 65 meters throughout the Paris and San Jacinto Valleys. And those flow meters will collect data that we will use to calibrate our hydraulic model and establish flow factors for both EDUs and different land use types. And we will also assess inflow and infiltration during rainfall events. And all of this data will be used to update our design criteria and assess our current and future CIP needs. The final effort will be to place meters to isolate certain areas of single-family residential development and use those meters to identify the concentration of those various constituents in our wastewater to try and see how they're changing over time. And the consultant will prepare a report summarizing all of these findings and then deliver us a calibrated hydraulic model that we can use going forward. So to select a consultant, we solicited proposals from seven engineering firms, and we received responses from three of them. And we assembled a team of staff from facilities planning, engineering, wastewater operations, and development services to review those proposals. We used our standard evaluation criteria. We looked at the firm's project understanding and their technical approach, their proposed scope of work, as well as their safety record. We looked at the qualifications of both their proposed teams and the firm overall, and finally, their proposed fees. So those criteria resulted in the ranking you see in the third column there. Black & Veatch came out number one, and the fourth column also shows the firm's proposed fees, and Black & Veatch was also the lowest proposed fee. The team consisted of Laura Barraza and myself from planning, Abdiel Picasso from CIP engineering, Jason Beard from wastewater collections, and Maroon El-Haj from development services. So our recommendation is for the board to approve and authorize a contract with Black & Veatch in the amount of $699,278 and a total appropriation in the amount of $862,500 to fund the project through completion. And that's all I have. Any questions?
Any questions? Is this your first time presenting before the board?
Second.
Okay. Good job. Okay. Would you like to make the motion, Director Armstrong?
Yes, I'd like to make that motion.
All right.
I'd like to move it.
Second. You get to second it today. Okay. All right. I got a motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. I get a roll call vote, please.
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Ford is nothing but Director Record temporary absent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go on to item B, which is to adopt a proposed resolution amending the Eastern Municipal Water District Administrative Code for provisions related to potable water, sewer, and recycled water.
Good morning. President Pauley. Good morning, members of the board. So today I'm going to be presenting amendments to EMWD's Administrative Code, particularly as it relates to potable water service, sewer and recycled water service. Now, most of these edits are clarifications of policy, but we are proposing new policy as it relates to accessory dwelling units and junior accessory dwelling units. So the next four slides are going to provide you with the sections being updated along with a brief description of those updates. Beginning with the potable service, the edits include adding definitions and also clarification of policy intent, which aligns to current practice. Basically, the applicant's responsibility that's related to water pressure conditions and construction of water main frontage for subdivision projects, and their responsibility to fund the design and construction of water main extensions. Continuing with potable, the terms of the district's pass-through frontage reimbursement program and the applicant's responsibility to also fund any incurred costs by the district, the applicant's responsibility with relation to the district's potential financial participation charge for oversized facilities that they construct. Now, the new policy is related to Section 5.307, which includes the basis for assessing and exempting water financial participation charges for accessory dwelling units and junior accessory dwelling units, and is in accordance with the law. It's also adding the exemption of financial participation charges with regards to recycled water meters, which has been in practice since 2021. I think I skipped a slide. Here we go. With regards to the sewer service, again, it's just adding definitions and clarifying policy intent based on current practice, which is related to, again, applicants' requirements related to sewer mainline extensions, applicants' financial responsibilities, and the terms of the district's pass-through frontage program. There's also an edit being to remove payment of frontage fees that is related to remote sewer service, which is no longer applicable and not a practice. Now, with regards to Section 6.210, which we've highlighted here, that also relates to the basis of assessing and exempting accessory dwelling units and junior accessory dwelling units in accordance with state law. Moving on to recycled water, the updates to this section are basically to include clarification of terminology and policy intent, and related to current practice as well as it relates to interim service connections and requirements for facility extensions and the district's pass-through frontage reimbursement program, and also the applicant's responsibility, which aligns to the potable water. So to touch more on accessory dwelling units, I'm going to provide you with the definitions. An accessory dwelling unit is basically an independent living unit, which can either be attached or detached from either an existing single-family home or a proposed new single-family home, whereas a junior accessory dwelling unit is basically contained within either an existing or a proposed single-family dwelling unit. Unlike ADUs, JADUs, which are the junior accessory dwelling units, they can share a bathroom within the single-family home. To provide you with some background, changes to the accessory dwelling unit laws were effective January 1st, 2021, and they provide more flexibility and make obtaining an ADU permit a more transparent and streamlined process with the jurisdictional agency. And this is in an effort to provide more rental housing to address housing and affordability needs. They also dictate EMWD's ability to collect fees. The California Department of Housing and Community Development, they've prepared guidelines in encouraging development of accessory dwelling units. As previously mentioned, sections 5.307 and 6.210 are amendments. There are amendments included in this section with regards to new policy basis for EMWD's administrative code for the collection of financial participation charges for accessory dwelling units in accordance with state law, which reads as follows. The connection fee or capacity charge for a new accessory dwelling unit that is constructed in conjunction with a new single-family dwelling unit or a newly constructed accessory dwelling unit that is not a conversion or existing space shall be proportionate to the burden of the proposed accessory dwelling unit based on its square footage or plumbing fixtures as compared to the primary dwelling. Now, for junior accessory dwelling units and accessory dwelling units that are converted from existing space, they're exempt from any type of fees. Before I move on to the recommendation, there was outreach that was done. Staff reached out to Mr. Lou Monville with the BIA to inform him that this item was being presented to the board today. He acknowledged receipt of that notification and indicated he would reach out with any questions to staff and was appreciative of the outreach. In addition, staff did reach out to our neighboring agencies, which included Western and Elsinore and Rancho. And Western and Elsinore already have practice in place where they collect connection fees proportionately to accessory dwelling units. So at this time, staff is recommending adopting the proposed resolutions amending EMWD's administrative code. And with that, I'm open to any questions.
Any questions on this? Director Slossy.
One of the beginning slides said better define what is exempt and not exempt from the financial participation. The last slide, or one of the last ones, that was those are the two exemptions. Basically, if you're converting something in an existing house, it's not a totally separate building, then that's exempt.
Right.
Because you're assuming they're not really increasing. That's correct. That's
correct.
Anything being an ADU being converted from existing space is exempt from fees.
Okay. All right.
New.
So for example, if you're improving a garage into
an ADU,
then yes, you would be exempt.
Correct.
If it's if it's within the existing structure, then yes, we will not collect additional connection fees. I did want to clarify why we're bringing this forward to the board at this time. What Alicia and the development services team is seeing is on a more regular basis new development, new tracts, residential tracts that include a separate ADU on the same lot. So I believe some developers are reacting to the need for additional affordable housing, and they're providing that. But that represents an added capacity burden on our system. And it's only fair and equitable that we collect the appropriate facility participation charge given the added reliance on our capacity.
Absolutely. Director Armstrong, do you have a question?
No.
Okay.
I'll move.
Motion by Director Corona. Second by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Passes 4-0 with Director Rackard absent. Thank you very much for the presentation. Moving on to item C, which is the Southwest Riverside County Alliance Memorandum of Understanding.
Good morning again,
good
President
morning.
Pauley, members of the board. Early last year, staff and elected officials from EMWD, as well as Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, Rancho California Water District, and Western Municipal Water District, held what was referred to as a joint agency water supply brainstorming workshop. Obviously, at that time, we were in much different water supply conditions, and having recognized that this could be the new norm, the agencies really got together to really determine what types of projects we as a collective could do that maybe individual agencies couldn't pursue on their own. As a result of that initial brainstorming session, EMWD took the lead and contracted with Woodard and Curran with equal participation financially and technically from each of the other three agencies. The agreement was that we would advance a study that, with the goal of identifying 3 to 5 potential concepts that could provide new regional water supply. In addition, identifying an action plan that could be implemented to advance these recommended concepts. Through that study, 13 concepts were evaluated, and they were really in three major groupings. One being ocean desalination, the second being local groundwater and or recycled water coupled with some type of recharge, as well as different options that considered capitalizing on imported water availability. Based on that study, the recommendation was to look at 3 of those concepts. These 3 ranked the highest when looked at from the standpoint of available water supply from a volumetric standpoint, potential cost considerations, as well as the ability to implement. Those 3 concepts that were recommended for further refinement included a new ocean desal plant located at or near Camp Pendleton, looking at increasing stormwater capture and recharge along the Santa Ana River, as well as utilizing groundwater storage during wet years to bring more imported water into the region. We also agreed at that time to continue the partnership between our 4 agencies, as well as jointly pursue external funding to help offset the costs of additional studies. We also are looking at potentially expanding the group at some point to consider additional partnerships, as well as preparing the conceptual timelines and next steps for these projects. So that, in essence, what has been happening over the past 6 months. Since we convened late last year with that additional direction, we have been working with the consultant and the staff from the other agencies to really understand what it would take to get to the next level for each of these 3 concepts. And late in June, the ad hoc committee did reconvene. The first order of business during that meeting was to establish a name of the group instead of just the joint agency. The name that was proposed was the Southwest Riverside County Water Alliance. And at the time, we also reestablished the purpose of the group, this is a draft mission statement that's still being tweaked, but in essence, really the focus is on diversifying the regional water supply portfolio by collaboratively developing and enhancing locally managed projects that will help meet the shared needs of long-term growth and future water resilience for Southwest Riverside County. Say that fast 3 times. Also, during that last ad hoc meeting, there was a summary of the prior work that has been looked at. All 3 of these concepts have been explored in some form or fashion over the years. So part of that update a couple weeks ago was to have an understanding of what those prior studies have seen and how that can be incorporated into our advancement of these concepts. This is a very high level of some of those studies that were identified in each of these 3 concepts that could be explored. First, understanding and learning from Doheny as well as Huntington Beach desalination projects, both 2 different outcomes and very different courses, so making sure we understand that as we further explore ocean desal. San Diego County Water Authority also had been pursuing a project on Camp Pendleton, so incorporating the findings from those studies and, again, how we can capitalize on that prior work, as well as some other focus studies within our region. Also, the Riverside North Aquifer Storage and Recovery Project, which is that acronym in the middle green there. This is work that had been explored by Western Municipal Water District as well as in conjunction with San Bernardino Valley Municipal Water District. So again, there has been work on this front in terms of how additional water on the Santa Ana River could be captured and recharged and used regionally. So revisiting some of those studies and looking for opportunities to build on that prior work. And then using the model for SARCUP, How can we utilize that existing potential network, or at least the processes and procedures that were used to advance SARCUP for additional regional water banking and increasing the amount of imported water that we bring into our service area? Recognizing that there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that still need to be addressed before we can truly understand the feasibility of these projects, it's really a multi-year, multi-phased approach that we recommended moving forward with the first year focusing on the conveyance for the ocean desal. We really felt that that's the number one question. If we were to advance and invest in an ocean desal project at Camp Pendleton or anywhere on the coast, how would that wet water get into Riverside County? So that is an early task that we're recommending that we advance, as well as updating some of the studies that I mentioned that were already explored as part of the stormwater capture and recharge along the Santa Ana River, as well as looking at how some of the SARCUP efforts can be utilized for wet weather imported water storage. So that would be year one. Then there would be a series of additional studies that could be incrementally advanced based on the findings of the year one work. The funding of these studies would also be incrementally advanced, with year one being approximately $400,000 total, being split between our four agencies. So again, with the focus for ocean desal being that conveyance question and how the water would get into Riverside County, updating some of the studies that were previously done for stormwater capture, as well as how a model like SARCUP could be further explored for additional imported water stored within the region. And again, incrementally building over the next couple years for additional investments should the group decide to continue embarking on these concepts. One of the other action items from the ad hoc meeting was to establish a memorandum of understanding between the four agencies for these next steps. This memorandum of understanding does define what we're calling the phase one project concept definition or development studies. There's three studies that are included in the MOU, one being ocean desalination, the second being the stormwater capture and recharge along the Santa Ana River, and the third being the imported wet weather storage in local groundwater basins. The MOU does establish that equal cost share, which right now we're estimating at $400,000 for phase one, so equal participation of $100,000 per agency. It does require that we reconvene and review the results of these phase one studies to determine what, if any, of the projects should be advanced to the next phase. So as I showed in that incremental build, there's no commitment for any of the agencies to move forward past phase one at this time. Again, this is going to be an incremental approach as we continue to collect and gain information. It does not imply any commitment to go any further than phase one, and it also acknowledges that participation is voluntary. However, it does stipulate that if a party was to withdraw, they do still have to meet the commitment that they had already made up to the at that point of withdrawal. So, for example, if an agency decides in 2 months they don't want to participate anymore, they would still be required to contribute the $100,000 that they've already committed to for this. It also includes the division of work. So all four agencies likely will have some part in terms of contract management in addition to the technical input that we've all been providing. And we also have agreed to continue to work together to apply for third-party funding. A few months ago, we also asked for your approval for our contribution toward Rancho California Water District's application for USBR funding for the ocean desal feasibility. So those types of opportunities we will continue to look for and support. In terms of next steps, with your approval, we would execute the memorandum of understanding. Also want to make sure that all four of our agencies are consistent in terms of how we refer to the study and the work that we're doing in terms of talking points and near-term funding and advocacy. We'd also advance the phase one project concept development with the $100,000 per agency, identify the lead agency for each of these studies, as well as develop scopes of work and retain consultants as needed for each study. We'd also perform outreach to potential partners, stakeholders, and the regulators. And then, as I mentioned, the USBR funding, should we be successful in being awarded that funding, we would adapt the phase one study as needed. So, for example, that funding is specific to the ocean desal. We would likely bring in some of those other evaluations that are in year two and three further up into the current work, because we would be getting funding from an external source. And the ad hoc committee did ask for an update in November of 2023 to continue to gauge our progress on these efforts. And with that, we are recommending the approval and authorization of execution by our general manager of the Memorandum of Understanding, as well as the appropriation of $100,000 to fund EMWD's portion of this next phase of work. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Question, Director Armstrong.
Yeah, question on the ocean desal and the studies that are going to be reviewed. I know that the state has their draft siting study or criteria study. Is that being reviewed by our team to see if there's anything in that that could hinder our efforts? You're shaking your head.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Any regulatory updates will be an important criteria, whether it's on intake or other types of technical considerations, because some of those could really have an impact on the size of desal plants that could be permitted and the timing and feasibility. So absolutely, that will be part of our work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that they take comments until the end of the month on the draft report. So I don't know if it's something we're looking at sooner if we need to, but.
And to your point, Director Armstrong, we did receive the report, the draft report that was published by the state, and we're looking at it to see if there's any comments that we need to make. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I think it's a great effort, and this is, I think, a great regional collaboration and everybody working really well together and furthering our efforts. And so I support it, and I would move the item.
All right. Any other comments?
No.
I just want to say, I mean, this is something that we started working on last year. We are the fastest growing region in California here. And I'm just going to say, if we and the other water providers in this region do not start taking steps to find additional water for the growth that we're experiencing, others are not going to come to help us. I'm just convinced of that. And so I think this is a step in the right direction of being self-sufficient in this area. I applaud the effort that you and the management team has done. I know that we have been a leader of this. I'm going to continue to be a leader in this alliance. The other agencies, I had a breakfast with Director Burke of Elsinore the other morning, and she's very excited about it. But this is just something that we need to do to take care of this region because of the growth that we're experiencing. So moved by Director Armstrong. I'm going to second it. May I get a roll call vote, please?
President Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
And Director Record absent. That passes 4-0. Thank you very much. Move on to item D, which is to approve an authorized property acquisition for the Mead Valley Booster Station replacement for an appropriation of $170,000. Mr. Bates.
Good morning, President Pauley, members of the board. The item today is a property acquisition for the Mead Valley Booster Project. And this facility is located in Director Armstrong's district. By way of background, the facility was constructed in 1964 and has reached at the end of its useful life. In addition, the Water Facilities Master Plan has identified the immediate need for approximately 1,500 gallons per minute of additional pumping capacity, as well as an additional 1,500 gallons per minute of pumping capacity by 2030. In 2019, the district did advance a condition assessment of this facility, and the condition assessment recommended full replacement. And we also wanted to highlight and thank Representative Takano for providing $1 million of funding for this project through the EPA STAG program. The existing facility is highlighted here. It's roughly about a mile and a half west of the I-215 freeway. In 2020, the board awarded a contract with Albert A. Webb and Associates to perform a preliminary design report. That preliminary design report identified the need for roughly 1 acre of property. Upon the identification of that need, real property staff were engaged in trying to find additional properties and reached out to neighboring owners. We received one inquiry or request that they would be willing to negotiate, and so we advanced that project and have reached terms with the property owner at the intersection of Decker and Cahalco to acquire the property. The property is currently vacant. The property located again at Decker and Cahalco being vacant property, the property owner has this long-term vision of putting in a community park, and so they wanted to get an idea of how would our facility interact with the park that they would like to build for the community. So we provided this this exhibit to the property owner. So our request is to acquire approximately 0.84 acres in fee title and then an additional 0.35 acres as a temporary construction easement. Upon finding the property, we did advance an appraisal process through our approved appraisers. We identified and provided an offer to the property owner at approximately $77,000. The property owner did reject our appraisal or our offer. Our offer was based on a rural residential land use. They elected to proceed forward with their own appraisal, which came back at $155,000. Their appraisal looked at commercial properties. We rejected their counteroffer and didn't feel that the commercial land use designation was appropriate. And so we then proceeded with negotiations to come to terms at an amount of roughly $20,000. Staff did consider, you know, should we go out and find additional properties, and in looking at the capital program, the delays that it would take to advance that project, as well as the lack of interest in other property owners, we identified that it was best to make this recommendation to you today to move forward with this acquisition. The graphic just shows kind of a typical pump station. You can see the pump room followed by the electrical room and then a generator room, and our standard is for CMU block buildings that would be mixed in with the park development. So with that, the action for you to consider is acquisition of property at roughly $120,000, authorize the general manager to execute all documents, and then appropriation of funds in the amount of $170,000. And with that, be happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
No questions.
I'll move it. Moved by Director Slauson.
I'll second.
Second by Director Corona. Megan, roll call vote, please.
President Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
That passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. Thank you for the presentation. We will now go on to item number 7 on our agenda today, which are informational items and presentations. First one we're going to do is something I'm very excited about, and that is our partnership with IEWorks. Scott Goodall is who's the executive director here this morning with us, and I guess you were going to do the introduction.
Yes.
Very good.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. I'm Jennifer Dancho. We met a couple weeks ago. I am here to introduce Scott Goodall, who's the project manager at IEWorks. Since late 2021, EMWD has been partnering with IEWorks with the intent of enhancing existing relationships and creating new relationships to greater develop our workforce for water and wastewater workers of the future. So Scott's going to provide an update today about what is currently planned to partner with IEWorks and then some future projects that he's got planned. With that, I'll turn it over to Scott.
All right. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. Great to be here. Great to provide an update on what we've been up to since EMW
EMWD joined IE Works. And just as an overview, I could click here to move. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We are a new workforce development consortium that's taking a regional approach to workforce development. And it includes water and wastewater agencies, their labor partners, educational institutions, and community organizations. And our mission is to increase the number of highly qualified candidates for mission-critical positions in the water and wastewater industry while promoting economic equity across the region. So we're laser-focused on helping local folks from disadvantaged communities learn about the great opportunities in water and get connected to different career pathways in water, and helping our water agencies to be able to find candidates for those mission-critical positions. We're really focused on the trade positions, the skilled trades in operations and maintenance. And this funding was initially developed, or we got this initial funding from the U.S. Department of Education. And we have a number of partner organizations listed here, including Metropolitan Water District, IEUA, West Valley, San Bernardino Municipal Water District, and as well as a few local mutual water agencies. And we, in 2021, Eastern joined IE Works. We began working more closely in January, looking at, you know, how can we partner, where are there opportunities for a deeper collaboration. And we identified a few areas. One was to participate in some career panels for our pre-apprenticeship program and participate in some interactive site tours, bringing folks into the water agencies to learn about these great careers and hear from tradesmen that work in these areas, and looking at creating part-time internships for community college students in some of those areas. And here you'll see a little picture of our career panel for our pre-apprenticeship program. Two supervisors came to our career panel and talked to the students about what it was like for them to get started in their career, how they found their career pathway, and tips and information about how they can get started on these same career pathways. So it was a great opportunity for them to learn from folks that have been successful in the field and are now in management positions. And we began looking at, you know, where might some opportunities be at Eastern to provide some work-based learning to some students. And so we identified one area as a pilot program for a GIS mapping intern. And so we've been working to establish this program with our community college partners. And how it works is that we partner with the local community colleges where there are these programs that are close to your area. We recruit and vet the candidates. So we recruit, we go to the classes, we talk about IE Works, we talk about these jobs that they might not even know. A lot of kids, you know, they're interested in GIS and these other areas, but they don't know how it connects to water. So we talk to them about that. We connect with the faculty at these at the colleges as well, and we recruit the students. We take applications, we vet them, and we refer them to the agencies for interviews. And you select the candidates, and we case manage them for a period of 1 year during the program and after the program. And we provide supportive services and job place assistance, you know, really with the ultimate goal of trying to help them find a job in that area. And so this is a great pilot program that we're excited about. This is the first GIS internship that we're working on. And we're excited about perhaps expanding that to some of the other water agencies using this model, evaluating it, and implementing at some of the other agencies. And where we're going, we're right now executing an MOU with Mount San Jacinto College to collaborate more deeply on this work-based learning initiatives. They have work-based learning coordinators that are really excited about getting more of their students opportunities to get some work-based learning opportunities, and you know, whether they be internships or apprenticeship programs. We're pursuing additional funding from the California Workforce Development Board to expand our training and sort of keep this model going, as well as some local opportunities for grant funding regionally. And piloting a mentorship training program right now. We've heard a lot in doing this work over the last 2 years, the need for folks to get some mentorship. So we're developing a curriculum and a training program and tools for folks to be able to link up with mentors in the field in those areas to support them as they move into that new career. And we're gonna see how this pilot program goes with GIS and look for other opportunities to provide internships and other work-based learning opportunities in these mission-critical positions that aren't going away. So we're very happy to have you as partners in this work, and if anyone has any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Any questions?
No questions. Good program.
No, it is. I appreciate you coming down and giving the board a briefing on it. I'm excited about our venture with IE Works. Obviously, we need a workforce, and I want to, one of the beauties of this agency is we set our goal to be a premier employer in our service area, and there's a lot of opportunities here. We need to continue to explore that with I love when we take some of our customers and make them employees and make them good, productive members of the community here. So I think with your help, we're going to continue to do that. And, again, just appreciate being part of IE Works. So thank you very much. Next up, we are going to hear from Mr. Jerry Brown of the Sites Reservoir. But, Mr. Brown, would you mind if we took about a five-minute break before your presentation? I would.